Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, and Christopher Jones Cruz. Later, Jill Robbins will tell us what's trending today, and Katie Weaver will bring us this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, President Donald Trump ordered the construction of a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border to act on his campaign promise of stronger immigration enforcement. The president signed executive orders to make federal funds available to build the wall during his Wednesday visit at the Department of Homeland Security. Trump also ordered the hiring of 10,000 immigration officers and 5,000 Border Patrol agents. He ordered the end of a policy in which some people are picked up after crossing the border illegally and then released. The president also directed his Secretary of Homeland Security to start the process of cutting federal money to cities that refuse to turn over undocumented immigrants. The cities have called themselves sanctuary cities. He said countries will take their criminals back, although he did not say how he would force them to do so. His order also calls for building more detention facilities for illegal immigrants. "We are going to get the bad ones out, the criminals, the drug dealers and gangs and gang members and cartel leaders," Trump said. "The day is over when they can stay in our country and wreak havoc." From the day he first announced his candidacy for president in June 2015, Trump promised to enforce immigration laws and build a big wall along America's southern border. "I will build a great, great wall on our southern border," he said in announcing his candidacy. "And I will have Mexico pay for that wall." Cost estimates for the wall range from $10 billion to $20 billion. In an interview with ABC News, Trump said planning for the wall will start immediately and construction can start in a matter of months. "The U.S. will pick up the costs," he said. But Trump said Mexico will repay the United States for the cost of the wall. "There will be a payment. It will be in a form, perhaps a complicated form," Trump told ABC. He said negotiations would begin soon. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has said Mexico will not pay for the wall. He plans to meet with Trump at the White House next week. Trump said he will also take steps to stop people from bringing guns from the United States into Mexico. "We're going to save lives on both sides of the border," he said. Trump is also expected to take action within days to limit who can enter the United States as refugees. He has been considering a 4-month freeze on refugee admissions. And he wants to stop the entry of refugees from Muslim-majority countries for at least 30 days. Groups that work with immigrant communities criticized the president's enforcement plan. Lynn Tremonte is deputy director of America's Voice Education Fund. "There's no way around it. Trump is declaring open season on immigrants, refugees, Latino families, and other people of color in America." Greg Chen is Director of Advocacy for the American Immigration Lawyers Association. He said, Trump's plan could put an end or cause a big reduction in America's role as a safe place for people threatened by violence and repression.
Turkey, Russia, and Iran have agreed to set up a process to help enforce a partial ceasefire in Syria. Negotiators for the three sides met for 2 days of talks with Syrian government and rebel representatives in Astana, the capital of Kazakhstan. The three also agreed to support efforts to find a political solution to the Syrian civil war. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said Wednesday that the meetings were, in his words, a serious diplomatic success. Yildirim said that any resolution of the conflict should involve a new Syrian government that represents all factions. A major point of disagreement in earlier talks has been the influence of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in any new government. Turkey supports the Syrian rebels. They want Assad to leave power. But Assad's supporters, including Russia, want him to remain as president. A statement released at the end of the talks said the Syrian government and opposition should meet next month in Geneva, Switzerland. After the talks in Astana, opposition groups expressed concern about the plan developed by Turkey, Russia, and Iran to ensure all sides obey the ceasefire. Issam al-Rais represents the Free Syrian Army's Southern Front. He said his group has always expressed concern about promises made by foreign governments. He added, "We hope this time that Russia is taking a different role." The leader of the Syrian opposition delegation, Mohammad Alush, said he gave Russia a detailed proposal for a peace deal. He said he expects an answer within a week. The Syrian government, Russia, and Iran all welcomed the trilateral plan. However, the government said its forces would push forward with an offensive against rebels close to Damascus. Syrian officials said the military is fighting terrorist groups allied with al-Qaeda. The Syrian ambassador to the United Nations, Bashar al-Jafari, also was the government's negotiator at the Astana talks. He said all sides had agreed on the final declaration. However, any major agreement remains unlikely because the Syrian rebel delegation refused to talk directly to the government. Also, some rebel groups were not invited to the talks because of their links to jihadist groups. The UN's special diplomat for Syria, Stefan de Mistura, said there are many groups, including extremists, fighting in Syria. Making progress between the government and rebels, he said, is difficult. Russia, Iran, and Turkey negotiated the current ceasefire in Syria in late December. However, the Syrian government and rebels have repeatedly broken the truce, which does not cover the whole country. The talks in Astana were the first negotiations organized by Iran, Russia, and Turkey. Some observers are concerned the peace effort may overtake Syrian negotiations that have taken place in Geneva. However, Syrian expert Noah Bonzi says the new negotiations are more likely, in his words, something in between. Bonzi is with the International Crisis Group. He said the Astana talks offer something different from the Geneva peace talks, but also provide new energy to negotiations there. The rebel groups in Astana said they will not attend the next meeting in Geneva if the current ceasefire fails. The next meeting is expected to take place on February 8th. Syrian opposition representatives met in Kazakhstan in 2015. UN diplomats organized peace talks involving other nations, including the United States. They resulted in earlier unsuccessful ceasefires. Russia and Turkey invited the U.S. government to the Astana talks, but the State Department said new President Donald Trump was setting up his administration. The U.S. ambassador to Kazakhstan did attend the talks as an observer. I'm Mario Ritter.
A new report says countries that elect populist leaders can have increased problems with inequality and government corruption. Watchdog group Transparency International released its findings Wednesday in an annual report on worldwide corruption. The Corruption Perceptions Index 2016 cited examples of how corruption and inequality have helped fuel growing populist movements around the world. Many traditional politicians promise to get rid of corruption but end up failing in the end, according to the report. This can cause unhappy voters to turn to populist candidates to break the cycle of corruption and privilege, it added. In many cases, the election of populist candidates worsens the same corruption that helped launch the populist movements, the report concludes. In countries with populist or autocratic leaders, we often see democracies in decline and a disturbing pattern of attempts to crack down on civil society, limit press freedom, and weaken the independence of the judiciary, said TI Chairman Jose Ugas. The watchdog ranked 176 countries on a scale of 0 to 100. 0 has the highest level of corruption, while 100 has the least corruption. Nearly 70% of all the countries scored below 50. At the top of the list were Denmark and New Zealand, both with a score of 90. Finland came next with a score of 89, followed by Sweden with 88. The report said each of these countries had an open government, free press, and independent judicial systems. Coming in last was Somalia, with a score of 10, which TI concluded had the worst corruption problems. It has received the lowest score for the past 10 years. The report cited corruption problems in Somalia's parliamentary and presidential elections. Other nations at the bottom were South Sudan, North Korea, and Syria. TI said low-ranking countries were found to have police and court systems that are not trusted by the public. In addition, many of these nations lacked basic services because government money is mismanaged. Anti-corruption laws either do not exist or are ignored, and people often face extortion, the report added. Two examples of nations that dropped on the list in recent years are Turkey and Hungary. The report said the reason was that both countries saw a rise in autocratic leaders. On the other hand, Argentina improved in the rankings after electing a new president to replace a populist government. The United States came in at number 18 on the list, down from 16 the previous year, with a corruption score of 74. Finn Heinrich is the research director for Transparency International. He said the organization will be watching the direction of the U.S. government under President Donald Trump. He said Trump had repeatedly promised to get rid of corruption in Washington, D.C. by draining the swamp. However, Heinrich told the Associated Press, "The people in his cabinet have many conflicts of interest. They are not people who stand for transparency." I'm Brian Lynn.
The first ever direct China to Britain freight train arrived in London last week. It was the latest evidence of China's efforts to redevelop the Silk Road trade routes that once stretched from Asia to Europe. The train arrived in London after an 18-day, 28,000-kilometer trip. It traveled from China through Kazakhstan, Russia, Belarus, Poland, Germany, Belgium, and France, and then crossed under the English Channel. Inside the 68 containers were household goods, clothing, cloth, bags, and suitcases. Philippa Edmonds works at the British Campaign for Better Transport.
This is twice as quick as sea, so it's got an important role there. And as I said, it's much, much cleaner and cheaper than air freight. I mean, it's 20 times less pollution than air freight.
But the train itself may be more important than the goods it was carrying. Observers say the trip had a political message that China is developing new trade routes and new markets. Freight trains from China already bring goods to 15 European cities. China needs to find more places to sell the goods it makes. That is the belief of Jia Yu of the London School of Economics.
The domestic market in China now seems to be very much stagnated. So the China is desperately looking for the new market and be able to absorb that excessive amount of production capacity. And obviously that freight train and serve a very good vehicle for the Chinese manufacturers and restore the business confidence inside China.
Jia Yu says Chinese leaders believe they can use trade to gain more influence in the world.
History opened a new era, and China has shown its willingness much more to shoulder more responsibility on the global stage and try to become a kind of responsible leadership.
Another historic trip was taking place as the Chinese train arrived in London. Xi Jinping became the first Chinese president to attend the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. At the meeting, he spoke about the importance of globalization and free trade. China's government made strong statements in support of free trade and globalization in the days after Donald Trump became president of the United States. Trump says China's trade policies have hurt the American economy. Some experts believe Xi's words were an answer to the new president's criticism of Chinese policies. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. The sport of sumo wrestling started in Japan over 1,000 years ago. But the Japanese have not had a native sumo grand champion, known as a yokozuna, since 1998. Sumo wrestlers known as yokozuna compete at the sport's highest level. That changed on Wednesday, when a wrestler known as Kise no Sato won his first championship at the New Year Grand Sumo Tournament. Kise no Sato is a 30-year-old whose real name is Yutaka Hajiwara. He weighs 178 kilograms and stands 1.88 meters tall. Over the past 20 years, all the sumo grand champions have been from Mongolia, Hawaii, and American Samoa. Usually, wrestlers must win two competitions back-to-back to become yokozuna. But Kise no Sato was recognized because of his latest victory and strong performances in recent events. Three other wrestlers currently compete at the yokozuna level. Kise no Sato said he would do his best to honor his new classification. A 2015 survey showed that sumo wrestling is still the most popular sport in Japan. But other sports like baseball, soccer, boxing, and golf are rising in popularity. Sumo's popularity suffered recently because of reports of scandals, including stories of young wrestlers being treated poorly by their mentors. Kise no Sato's success is big news in Japan. One Facebook user published an image showing his photograph on the front of six different newspapers. And that's what's trending today. I'm Jill Robbins.
While it might seem as if Wi-Fi is available everywhere, sooner or later, you will go somewhere Wi-Fi is not. You still need to get on the internet. What are you to do? Well, you may have a solution right in your pocket. A cell phone. Many cell phones let you turn your cellular connection to the internet into a Wi-Fi connection for other devices. This is called creating a hotspot. Your cell phone will show as a Wi-Fi network that others can join. Connecting a tablet or computer to that hotspot is called tethering. Using your phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot can help when you want to share your phone's internet connection with your computer or tablet, or someone else's. Or perhaps there is an available Wi-Fi network, but you are not sure the connection is secure. Using your phone as a hotspot will let you avoid unsecured Wi-Fi networks. Family car trips could be more fun if you use your phone's hotspot to connect a tablet to the internet. You may be able to avoid paying a fee for your tablet cellular plan by tethering your tablet. Maybe your home or office has a power outage and you need to use the internet. Connect your laptop or tablet to the Wi-Fi hotspot on your phone. To turn your iPhone into a hotspot, go to Settings, then Personal Hotspot. The next screen will let you set a password. Do not skip this step. The name of your network is the name you have given to your phone. Slide the switch to on and follow the directions that appear. You can use your Android phone as a hotspot if it is running Android 2.2 or later operating systems. Your phone and carrier must also permit tethering. To turn your Android phone into a hotspot, go to Settings, then Mobile Hotspot and Tethering. Tap on Mobile Hotspot to turn it on. Set the name of your network and set a password. You connect a computer or tablet to your phone's Wi-Fi hotspot just as you would connect to any other Wi-Fi network. Select the name of your phone's network, enter the password, and connect. Some phones also permit you to tether using a cable and/or Bluetooth. Before you start using your phone as a hotspot, there are some things you need to know. When your phone is a hotspot, it is sharing your monthly data allotment with other devices. Tether only when you need it, so you can avoid running out of data before the end of the month. You also do not want your phone to become an open Wi-Fi network, free for anyone to use. Your data allotment could be used up in minutes. For that reason, you want to select a strong password and share it only with people you trust. Hotspots use a lot of power, so your phone's battery can run down quickly. If you are going to tether for a while, be sure to plug in your phone to charge while the hotspot is turned on. You will save battery power and data if you turn the hotspot off as soon as you are finished tethering. If you are in a place without a cell phone signal, then your phone's hotspot will not connect a device to the internet. Make sure your phone and carrier both permit hotspot connections. And remember, the more devices that are connected to your hotspot, the faster your data allotment will go. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.